Good morning. We will call the Eastern Municipal Water District Board of Directors meeting for October 5th, 2022 to order at 9 a.m. We always start our meetings with the Pledge of Allegiance. Director Record, you are closest to the flag this morning. Would you like to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
My pleasure. Please join me in a salute to our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
If I could ask the Board Secretary to guide people on how to virtually attend and take the roll call of the Board, I'd appreciate that.
Absolutely. To avoid creating acoustic feedback, please mute all your devices during the meeting unless you are speaking. Before speaking, please unmute your device and turn down the volume of any other devices that are near you and tuned into the meeting. If you have joined by phone and would like to comment on an item, please press star 9 to let our staff know and wait to be notified. When it is your turn to speak, you will hear a notification asking you to unmute your phone by pressing star 6. If you have joined by computer, you may use the chat feature in Zoom to indicate your desire to speak. When done speaking, please mute your device again. Please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you are speaking. Now we'll do roll call. President Pauley?
Present.
Director Slauson?
Present.
Director Record?
Here.
Director Armstrong?
Here.
Our legal counsel is here, and just to note, Director Corona is absent.
Very good. Thank you so much. April, do we have anybody who's indicated a wish to do public comment this morning at our meeting?
No, we do not.
We do not. Very good. Before I go on to executive reports, I would like to note that this is Water Professionals Week here. And I know that we have posted a lot on our social media about the great employees we have at Eastern Municipal Water District, and which we do. We had the opportunity this morning, my fellow directors and I, to join several of our employees that were very instrumental in the Fairview fire situation. We had the fire chief of Riverside County join us this morning to thank them for their efforts. And it is just part of the culture here at Eastern. When things happen, our employees go to work. We are a vital part of this community. And I just want to recognize that Water Professionals Week is something we take very seriously here, and to thank all the employees of Eastern Municipal Water District for doing just an exemplary job for this district and the close to a million residents that rely on us for water, wastewater, recycled water. I think I speak for the whole board when I say we are all proud to lead this organization. And we have a great leader in our general manager, Joe Mawad. So, Mr. Mawad, I'll give you the floor for your report.
Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board, and thank you for those remarks. I sincerely do appreciate the board's support and recognition of the staff, and this morning's event was just one example of how this board has taken the time to recognize the contributions made by our staff. So thank you for that. I do appreciate that, and the staff appreciates it. My report is included in your packet under new and ongoing items. I am very pleased this morning to share with you that Monday this week, the State Water Resource Control Board unanimously approved an additional $17 million in grant funding for our Perth North groundwater remediation program. That brings the total grant funding for that program to $62 million, by far the largest single grant that this agency has ever received. We're very pleased with the State Board's decision. We will be sending letters of appreciation to Chairman Joaquin Esquivel and also members of the State Board expressing our gratitude for their action. We will also be preparing a press release accordingly. Next on my report, the South Coast Water District recently reached out to EMWD asking for a letter of support as their proposed Doheny Ocean Desal project will be considered by the Coastal Commission on October 13th. And in coordination with the Executive Committee, President Pauley and myself signed a letter of support indicating that the project provides additional water supply to Southern California, and our interest in exploring all sources of additional water supply and our interest in looking at partnerships. So To that end, in coordination with South Coast, our Senior Director of Engineering, Sean Stone, will be attending the Coastal Commission hearing later this month, and we'll be delivering our remarks consistent with our support letter. Next item I wanted to brief the board on, as you're aware, we have been working with the U.S. Air Force for a number of years on the PFAS contamination that originates from the March Air Reserve Base. And the Air Force has been very collaborative in addressing the treatment needs at Well 59, and that well has been put back in service after the Air Force funding not only the design and construction, but also the cost of import water while the well was offline. We have a similar situation at Well 56, again, located just south of the March Air Reserve Base. In the past, the Air Force has taken the position that because the PFAS concentration did not exceed the EPA's health advisory, that that well was treated differently than Well 59. Well, as we're all aware, the EPA recently revised the health advisory threshold. That got lowered from 70 parts per trillion down to a fraction of a part per trillion. Based on that change and in coordination with our legal counsel, this week we did send a letter to the Air Force advising them of our position on Well 56 and asking that they enter into a tolling agreement. As you recall, Well 56 was removed from service in February 2019. So we look forward to engaging with the Air Force on this issue and having a conversation, and hopefully we can get to a point where not only do we enter into a tolling agreement, but ultimately we enter into an ESCA agreement for funding to rehabilitate the well. Just to note that this afternoon, staff from the Air Force San Antonio office will be coming out to visit Well 59 as well as Well 56 and Well 57, and our Director of Environmental Regulatory Compliance, Al Javier, will be meeting with them as well. Next, I wanted to update the board. As you're aware, with the governor's executive order prohibiting the use of potable water to irrigate non-functional turf for commercial, institutional, and industrial sites, we have undertaken an effort to implement those requirements. In addition to the board action, we've held a series of workshops, and the latest of which was last week. We met with additional CII customers. We informed them of the prohibition and provided various programs to assist them in not only removing non-functional turf, but also to transform those areas to drought-tolerant landscaping. We want to see this transformation as a permanent change, not simply non-irrigation for the one-year prohibition by the governor. To that end, we also will be informing all of our CII customers that their water budgets will be adjusted. Those that currently receive ET factor of 70%, that water budget will be revised to reflect an ET of 0.5 or 50%. That will allow them to continue supporting drought-tolerant landscaping, but not functional turf. So that notification will be going out to our CII customers. Under items of interest to the board, I wanted to mention to you that recently myself and the executive team did host the county Department of Environmental Health. They came out and they toured our Paris 2 facility. It was a really good opportunity to reconnect with many of our partners at the county. And as you know, we work with the Department of Environmental Health on a number of our initiatives, including the Quail Valley Septic to Sewer Program, as well as Wine Country Program. So it was a great opportunity to have them visit EMWD and tour our facilities. Also, last week, myself and our senior executive team had the opportunity to visit with the March JPA. They hosted us, gave us a tour of their programs and properties that are being developed, including the Hillwood project along I-215. You may have seen that large warehouse facility. So we had an opportunity to meet with them, and as you know, we have supported March JPA and Western with interagency agreements to support water service as well as fire flow to many of those March JPA properties. Finally, I wanted to share with you outcome of the governor's recent signing and in some cases vetoing of a number of bills that are relevant to EMWD. As you may be aware, AB 2142 has been enacted, and essentially for this year and the following 4 years, it provides for customers who receive rebates to remove their non-functional turf or other water conservation rebates. Essentially, those rebates will not be taxable, and that is something we have lobbied for a long time. So we're very pleased that bill was signed into law. SB 1157, the Hertzberg bill, unfortunately was signed into law as well. As you're aware, that bill will ultimately reduce the gallons per day per capita from the current 55 gallons GCPD down to 47 GCPD in 2025 and ultimately to 42 GCPD in 2030. Now, the bill does require that the Department of Water Resources undertake various studies to quantify the impacts, both financial and otherwise, on wastewater systems as well as recycled water systems. And when signing this bill, the governor did communicate to the State Water Resource Control Board his desire to see them consider recycling, water recycling. How would that potentially change the requirements stipulated under this bill? So we're going to continue working with the state to obviously make the case that we recycle 100% of our water, we put it to beneficial use, and thus indoor conservation does not truly benefit our system. So we will continue to advocate for that position. I also want to mention that we currently have an ongoing cost of service study for the next biennium, and as part of that, we are incorporating the lower GCPD requirement for 2025. And finally, I wanted to mention that SB 222 was vetoed by the governor, and we are pleased that occurred. If it had been signed into law, the bill would have created a statewide water rate assistance program and water rate assistance fund to provide water affordability assistance for drinking wastewater services to low-income ratepayers. The governor noted when he vetoed the bill that a lack of sustainable funding source was a key consideration for him when he vetoed the bill. In the absence of this bill, it affords agencies like us the latitude to continue implementing assistance program, as we've done over the last many years, including our Help to Others program, which has been very successful. In fact, early 2023, staff will be bringing forward to this board additional enhancements and expansion of the Help to Others program for your consideration. With that, I would be happy to answer any questions the board may have.
Any questions for the general manager? Director Record?
Joe, I appreciate, as you know, what you have done and the district has done as far as non-functional turf and the enforcement of non-irrigating with potable water. And I think we're ahead of a lot of other agencies. At what point do you think we're going to start enforcing that? I mean, we have the ability to fine people if we need to. I would hate to get to that point, but I mean, there's nothing that I see in the news anywhere that says we're going to have a decent weather year, so we might as well get ahead of it. So maybe we can come back at some point about what that might look like if we actually have to get to a point where we're doing enforcement. So
No, I appreciate that feedback, Director Record, and you're absolutely right. The current, not only executive order, frankly, the action that and the resolution that this board adopted does provide us the latitude to fine individuals for noncompliance, absolutely. So we will be coming back to the Planning Committee and sharing with the Planning Committee not only our progress towards converting and removing irrigation of non-functional turf in CIA, but also the next step, as you said, the enforcement, actually site visits, patrolling those CII sites, and if they're not compliant, then we will be taking that next step in terms of enforcement. So we will be sharing additional details at the next Planning Committee and providing a more detailed update accordingly.
Okay, thank you.
Director Armstrong.
Yeah, I would just like to echo the opening comments and say I also appreciate and thank the entire team at Eastern in this Water Professional Appreciation Week.
Thank you.
And I also thought that the celebration this morning really highlighted how quickly this team jumped into action to help make matters better in that fire. And so I think the general public doesn't always understand, you know, the hard work that the water professionals do, and even in crisis and emergencies like that, how they jump into action. So I thought it was really great that you had that celebration.
Thank you, Dr. Armstrong. Appreciate that.
Director Slauson? No questions. Thank you very much,
Thank
Joe.
You.
Great report this morning. Laura, do you have anything for us this morning?
Nothing this morning.
Nick, and again, great job this morning on kind of co-hosting our event. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. I do have one item, brief item I'd like to share. Actually, Linnea Alexander would have wanted to share this information if she were here today. As you know, we have a very strong, robust CIP program, and we closed out fiscal year 21-22 at a 94% execution rate. Again, we keep on, you know, bumping right up against that 100% execution, which is a true reflection of the teamwork, the careful coordination that takes place amongst many departments within the district, as well as coordinating with outside agencies and our consulting and contracting partners in executing the program. So we're pleased to report that. So we spent $99.8 million of $106 million budgeted. Grant reimbursement that year totaled close to $21 million for an out-of-pocket amount of about $79 million, and we reached a completion status on 21 construction projects in that year. So I'm very, very pleased with that. And I also want to express, you know, my appreciation to the board, the trust and support that you give us. I mean, that's very instrumental in our ability to execute a program consistently year after year at this sort of a rate. So thank you.
Thank you, Nick. Matt, anything for us this morning?
Good morning. I have nothing this morning.
Very good. We'll now take us to item three on our calendar or our agenda this morning, which is the consent calendar. Are there any members of the board that would like to pull an item for either a separate vote or discussion? Seeing none, I'll look for a motion and a second on the consent calendar.
I'll move approval.
Moved by Director Slauson, second by Director Record. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes 4-0 with Director Corona absent from the vote. We'll now go on to item 4 on the agenda, which is our action calendar. Item A is to approve and authorize and award a contract to W.M. Lyles Company for $40 million under specification 14-12S Moreno Valley Regional Water Reclamation Facility Plant 2B equipping and flow diversion and additional appropriation for a total of $48.6 million.
Good morning, President Pauley, and good morning, board members. So this morning I'll be presenting our recommendation to award a contract to W.M. Lyles for the Moreno Valley Plant 2B Equipping and Flow Diversion Project. Before I start, I'd like to introduce a couple guests that we have with us. On behalf of our design consultant, Corollo Engineers, we have Graham Dapulaputi and Rajesh Dapulaputi. On behalf of W.M. Lyles, we have their project manager, Sean McGregor. And on behalf of our construction management team, we have our own Scott Lopian. And from our third-party construction manager, Ardura, we have Amy Chakowski.
Very good. Thank you all for being here this morning, as this is one of those larger items that we do here at the Water District, much necessary. So I do appreciate you attending our board meeting on behalf of your individual agencies this morning.
So this project will be located at our Moreno Valley Regional Water Reclamation Facility. This morning I'll be going over the project background, summary of the bids, services, requested services during construction, our schedule, and our recommendations. So a little bit of background, Moreno Valley Plant 2B and Flow Diversion Project. Plant 2B is currently offline, and it has no equipment, as can be seen on the bottom left picture. So this project is needed to equip Plant 2B and provide the necessary secondary treatment capacity based on current flow projections. So this project will be the first in a series of planned expansion and rehabilitation projects at Moreno Valley, which are necessary to meet the projected sewer flows in the area. Some of the components for this project include large diameter piping necessary to connect the adjacent equipment, installation of aeration panels, and necessary modifications to the aeration system at Plant 2B, which is this empty shell here. The mechanical equipment installation and replacements, electrical instrumentation and control system improvements, and also site civil improvements. One of the largest components of this project is the new CARB system, centrate and RAS aeration basin. So this system will assist both Plant 2B and 2A, which is currently running, with nitrogen removal and adverse ammonia loading, as it will include centrate pump stations and centrate equalization tanks These are necessary to improve secondary treatment capacity at the plant. The project will also construct infrastructure necessary to divert controlled and metered flow to our Paris Valley RWRF. This diversion is going to be necessary as we advance the next rehabilitation projects and also prepare for increased sewer flows in the area. On June 28th, we advertised a project to five pre-qualified contractors. On September 1st, we received three bids. WM Lyles Company of Fresno, California was the lowest responsive bidder in the amount of approximately $40 million. Our engineer's estimate was approximately $37 million, which brings a delta of approximately 8%. So this is just kind of a zoomed-in version, so you can see the numbers. I know the previous slide, it's a little hard to see. But here we can see that we did get a pretty close spread from the three bids that we did receive. And the 8% in this current market is not too bad. This morning, also, we are recommending execution of a contract with Coral Engineers to provide typical engineering services during construction. We're also recommending execution of a contract with Converse Consultants to provide soils and concrete sampling and testing required during construction of the project. Should the board approve our recommendations this morning, our plan is to issue WM Lyles notice to proceed later this month with a construction substantial completion date of March 2025. So our recommendations this morning are to execute a contract with WM Lyles in the amount of approximately $40 million, execution of a contract with Corolo Engineers in the amount of approximately $1.3 million, execution of a contract with Converse Consultants in the amount of approximately $177,000. Administrative award of ancillary contracts necessary to complete the project. Staff is requesting an additional appropriation of approximately $48.7 million, which brings the total estimated project cost to $52 million. At this time, I'd be happy to answer any questions the board may have.
Any questions from the board on this?
We reviewed this in committee. I have no questions.
Very good. I had one. If our representative from Lyles could, if you had, do you want to come up for a sec? I just had a quick question on. And again, appreciate you being here very much today. Jobs this size, subcontractors and things, I always like to make sure that the districts, we're working with local folks and local subcontractors, and I take it that's probably in the plan, or?
Yeah, absolutely. That we benefit from working with local subs, local vendors. Obviously, anything close, we're not going too far away from home. So Lead Electric will be our electrical subcontractor, and we'll be using Murphy Coatings for our coatings and CMC for our rebar. So those are all local.
Okay, appreciate it. I just, when we spend a lot of money, I like to make sure we're always helping our local folks, local economy. Again, very much appreciate you being here for this morning and answering questions. Thank you very much. With that, I will look for a motion and a second to move the item.
Move approval.
Moved by Director Record.
Second.
Second by Director Armstrong. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes 4-0 with Director Corona absent. Again, thank you for all our guests for being here on this item this morning. That will move on to item B, which is to approve and authorize engineering service agreement with Hazen and Sawyer Incorporated for $2 million for the preliminary and final design of Temecula Regional Water Reclamation Facility and the Paris Valley Water Reclamation Facility Sidestream Treatment Project and appropriation of $2.4 million.
Good morning. It's a mouthful, isn't it? Well, good morning, President Pauly and esteemed members of the board. I'm Scott Toland, engineering manager in the CIP department, and I have the pleasure of presenting the sidestream treatment recommendations for consulting services. Today we have present, the selection committee chose Hazen and Sawyer. We have Cindy Miller, Hampik Dekramingian, and Bryce Danker present.
Very good. Thank you all for being here this morning.
All right. Let's jump into the presentation. Here we go. So a little bit of the background. As indicated by the title, this project is focused on our Paris Valley and Temecula Valley reclamation facilities, and the purpose and objectives is to treat the high nutrient loading in the dewatering centrate streams. The project consists of designing and implementing equalization and deamoxification technologies. One of the other benefits, and we'll touch base a little bit more in the slide on this, is this approach also allows us to defer some of the major plant expansions out into the future. The 2015 master plan identified the need to mitigate increased nitrogen loading at the district's treatment facilities and recommended advanced treatment of the high-strength ammonia side streams from the biosolids advanced centrate streams. In 2019, the district advanced the side stream treatment feasibility study to evaluate leading treatment technologies with recommendations for the deamonification technologies. As you can see from these graphics, these type of processes are very modular and easily expandable to fit the future needs of our plants. So it's that's another benefit of it. Just a quick overview of the chemistry. Big picture is that these technologies convert ammonia into nitrite, and then through the oxidation process, and then that nitrite is converted into nitrogen gas through the anammox processes. Cost-effective solutions. So, again, in the feasibility study, one of the other benefits that we identified was this technology allows us to defer major plant expansions into the future. This particular graphic represents the Paris Valley treatment facilities, and the projections estimate approximately 8 years of deferment until we have to consider a major plant expansion. The study also included similar graphics for our Temecula Valley with similar results. The RFP was issued in June of this past year. We issued that to 7 consultant firms. 4 firms proposed, and the proposals were opened in July of 2022. Our selection panel consisted of both engineering and operations staff, and this table indicates the primary selection criteria. Obviously, we look at the firm's innovative approaches, project understanding, the relevant qualifications and experience of both the firm and their local project teams, their ability to execute within the aggressive schedules, and then, to some extent, their past performance and company stability. The spreadsheet indicates the 4 firms that pursued the project. We have good relationships with all 4 of these companies. They regularly support us in the engineering department on our various projects. Hazen and Sawyer's proposal did stand out amongst the rest, and it was unanimous by the 4 panel selection committee that they were ranked number 1. Some of the highlights of theirs is they demonstrated a direct and extensive design and commissioning of side stream treatment technologies. They also presented and committed to a more aggressive schedule than most of the other firms. The highlighted fee in yellow was the final negotiated fee with Hazen. And their scope services includes some additional data review of the latest data, confirmation that the technologies are still the valid technologies based on some of the advancements, the typical preliminary and final design phases of design, and then the both construction cost and construction schedule estimates, as well as services during the bidding process. Their schedule, assuming that the board approves, we will establish a notice to proceed this month. The PDR is rather aggressive, but we are shooting to have a final PDR completed in January, so it'll truly be happy holidays for both teams and visions of sugar plums and draft PDRs under the tree. Preliminary design completion and final will push out into the third quarter of 2023. So our recommendations today is for the board to approve and authorize execution of a professional service agreement with Hazen and Sawyer in the amount of approximately $2 million. The approval of administrative award for the ancillary contracts to support the project, and appropriation of approximately $2.4 million to fund the project through the design phase. With that, I'll open it to questions.
Any questions on this item?
I don't have any questions. I'd just like to thank Mr. Toland for that very jolly presentation.
Yes. Got to start thinking about the holidays.
I will just say it appears that Thomas Hayes has been coaching people on how to do board presentations. With that, if there are no questions, I will make the motion for this item. Is there a second? Director Armstrong, would you like to second this item? Seconded by myself. Seconded by Director Armstrong. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Beckert?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes 4-0 with Director Corona absent. We will move on to item C, which is to approve and authorize electric vehicle charging station project, appropriation amount of $527,000. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning. Thank you. There has been quite a bit of discussion and talk lately with regard to the transition to zero emissions vehicles in the state of California in particular. But this is not necessarily something that, I went one slide too far, that is new to the district. In fact, we incorporated this into our strategic priorities earlier this year to address this inevitable change. There are three primary components to our planning so far to date. We are developing a vehicle replacement master plan, which basically identifies the projected schedule through 2040 of when our light and heavy-duty equipment and construction vehicles will be replaced in anticipation of slotting that into these upcoming regulations. The second part of this is the expansion of our charging infrastructure, and we're here to present recommendations on that today. And then the vehicle replacement with that master plan schedule and the expansion of our vehicle charging infrastructure, where we'll be presenting recommendations through the budgetary process as when to buy certain classes of vehicles and certain numbers of vehicles to comply with those regulations, but then to minimize the impact on our budget and the operations of the district. So with that twofold presentation today, we've asked Allison Torres from our Environmental and Regulatory Compliance Department to give you an update on the regulatory aspects of this, and then we'll transition into the recommendations to participate with Southern California Edison on the incentive program to expand our electric vehicle charging station. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Allison.
Very good. Good morning.
Good morning, board members, President Pauley and board members. I'm going to provide a brief regulatory update. Let me lower this a little bit. We have two major regulations that are coming down from the California Air Resources Board. They've been tasked to take actions to force a transition to zero-emission vehicles. California has a very aggressive greenhouse gas reduction goals, and these regulations are transitioning fleets from our conventional combustion vehicles to zero-emission vehicles. So there's two major regulations that essentially impact all vehicle classes in California and ultimately impact EMWD's fleet. On August 25th, 2022, CARB voted to require all cars and light-duty trucks in California to transition to zero-emission by 2035. This is referred to as the Advanced Clean Cars 2 regulation. In addition, CARB is also finalizing a rule that affects public and privately owned fleets to transition medium and heavy-duty vehicles to zero emission beginning in 2024, and this is referred to as the Advanced Clean Fleets regulation. So for the light-duty vehicles, these are often referred to as Class 1 and Class 2A. This is a phase-in regulation that's going to begin in 2026 with model year 2026 vehicles. This is the Advanced Clean Cars 2 regulation, and as illustrated in the graphic here, by 2035, 100% will transition to ZEVs by 2035. So this applies to new vehicles sold in California, and for this vehicle class, there are currently no accelerated purchase requirements to turn over vehicles for fleet operators such as EMWD. So for the medium and heavy-duty vehicles, these are commonly referred to as Class 2B through 8. There is a phase-in regulation that is currently being considered, and it will begin in 2024, and it mandates that zero-emission vehicles are purchased for new vehicle purchases. This is referred to as the Advanced Clean Fleets Regulation. This regulation essentially will have three parts. There's a private and federal fleet section, drayage truck section, and then a state and government fleet section. It impacts most fleets in California, and there are specific requirements that will vary by fleet type. So I'm going to focus on the public agency fleets. For public fleets, the regulation will apply to the purchase of any vehicle greater than 8,500 gross vehicle weight rating, which is essentially medium and heavy-duty vehicles. And the key requirement written in the regulation that directly impacts the district is the incremental ZEV purchase requirements. So starting in 2024, 50% of added vehicles between 2024 and 2026 will need to be ZEVs. Based on the draft master schedule, this equates to about 25 zero-emission vehicles in that 2024 to 2026 timeframe. This will increase to 100% of added vehicles in the weight class starting in 2027 will need to be ZEVs. Based on the draft master plan, this is about 12 vehicles in 2027 alone. So the regulation for this one hasn't been completely adopted yet by the CARB board. It will be presented to CARB this month for the first of two board meetings, but it's expected to be adopted in early 2023. So that concludes the regulatory update, and I will transition to Sam.
Before I begin, I just want to introduce SB Bracci. She's here with SCE. She's the district's customer account rep for our accounts.
Thank you for being here this morning.
So, and she's guided us through this process to date. So thank you for joining us. So good morning, members of the board. Thank you for your time. So I'll just start off. So as you recall, the district did already start 2017 installing 10 EV chargers in the back lot. They're five dual-port chargers and were reimbursed by the South Coast Air Quality Management District of $25,000 for that. And with the installation of those, the district did expand its electric fleet to include four Fusion hybrids, one Ford Focus EV, and recently ordered two Ford F-150 Lightnings, although their expected deliveries not quite known at this time. So district vehicles can charge back there, and employees can charge their vehicles for 21 cents a kilowatt hour. So with the SEE's Charge Ready program, they are offering significant incentives to transition from a traditional gas fleet to EV fleet. Under Charge Ready, Southern California Edison will install all necessary infrastructure, including transformers, step-down transformers, sub-panels, conduit, wiring, essentially to a stub out for the district to install their own purchased charger. And then after the installation of those chargers, there's a $724 rebate per charger that's installed that the district can receive following completion of that. Couple steps the district have to do. We will have to grant the necessary easements to SEE for the access for the infrastructure. We'll have to maintain and report operation and reporting for those chargers for 10 years, use reporting, and then enroll in an approved demand response program. So energy staff have initiated the first steps in the process. We currently have a 90% design plan in hand. We've met with the charge program administrators and located the chargers on district property, best suited where they'll go. So 34 chargers will go in the public access area parking lots, with the balance of 94 chargers, so 60 chargers will go in the back of the AC building parking lots for district vehicles, and if the desired employees can charge their vehicles there too. So by utilizing this program, the district, it's estimated, will save roughly $1 to $1.5 million in engineering, construction, design costs for the installation of that infrastructure for the charging, and receive an estimated $65,000 in rebates for the installation of EV chargers. So that being said, there are still some costs for the districts. We will need to purchase the EV chargers themselves, estimated about $375,000. Installation charges of about $59,000. Annual O&M cloud subscription fees, $53,000. And then the additional inspection costs, district costs, for a grand total of $527,000 to participate in the program. As I mentioned before, we're at 90% design completion. Quick project schedule, sorry, not design completion, today's board meeting. Following this, there will be a participation agreement to enter into with SCE. After some further design and tweaking on the plans, they plan on construction start first quarter of 2023 and then wrapping up third quarter of 2023. So with that, project recommendations for the board to approve and authorize a project in the amount of $527,000, authorize the execution of SCE's Charge Ready participation agreement, and then approve and authorize O&M and related cloud subscription fees of $53,000 per year. And any questions, I'm happy to answer.
Very good. Go ahead, Joe.
I just want to clarify a couple things. Part of this program, it's a good program for us to participate in. Allows Edison to construct the facilities at a significant savings to the MWD. The public access feature of this program, as you showed on the prior exhibits, a number of these charging stations will be in our EC parking lot as well as OC parking lot. Just want to clarify that those will be available to the public when those lots are open. Can you maybe clarify that point?
Sure. Yes. So, during regular business hours of the district, the public will be able to enter and charge their vehicles there at whatever rate the district sets for those chargers. You can have different time slots that vehicles, you know, no longer 2 hours, 4 hours, however you'd like to set that up. And we suspect that with all the folks visiting the water park, Field of Dreams, with ready access to chargers like that, that during those times there will probably be some good use of those chargers in there. You know, with the option, should the district decide to allow weekend access or what have you, it's really at our discretion for those chargers. But yeah, and during regular business hours, there'll be full public access to those facilities.
And there'll be a third party entity that will be responsible for the assessments, collection, and so on. Can you maybe describe that as well?
Yeah, so currently with the chargers we have in the back through ChargePoint, they handle all the transactions for the purchase of that charging availability, distribution of the funds to the district. They take 10%. That's the kind of the industry norm on that. So monthly we get a check for employee use of those chargers back there. And interesting to note, when they first were installed, the average monthly use was below $50. Currently, it's been creeping up, so we see about $300 a month of employee use of those chargers. So as they become more available, it seems employees have really dug in and purchased more EVs themselves to use there.
Thank you. I'm assuming we have lots of questions on this. We'll start Director Record.
So 11 cents a kilowatt hour, is that correct? Is that what I saw?
21 cents.
21 cents. And is that just the beginning rate, or is that going to last for a while, or how does that work? Does this go up with...
The way that price was based, the average cost per kilowatt hour here at this facility is 19 cents a kilowatt hour. The charge 0.10% fee brought it to 21 cents a kilowatt hour. So that's what was set for those chargers. Ultimately, it'd have to be reviewed and discussed further, but wherever we end up. And Dan may have more information.
Yeah, sorry about that. So, Director Rector, I believe you're referring to the rate that the public would be charged. Sam was referring to the charge that goes to employees, which is a calculation of our okay. estimated energy rates here at this facility. So the EV charging rate under Edison's tariffs that is specific to this program is between 11 and 17 cents per kilowatt hour.
Yeah, it's a very good rate.
Yes.
So
yes.
I see that there's two F-150s ordered. When do you expect the delivery?
Yeah.
I mean,
good question. They were probably due already, but with the chip shortages and everything else, we're having difficulty receiving standard vehicles, let alone these EV first generation vehicles.
And do you think the other vehicles that we're required to purchase will be available at that point? I mean,
we believe they will. In fact, I just read an article this morning before coming down here where additional manufacturers are coming online in the light duty market, largely due to this movement. So it will happen. We're getting ahead of that curve for the district by taking advantage of this program. Certainly, we're going to have more charging capabilities than we have vehicles for a period of time to come, but we're able to capitalize on the infrastructure investment that is $1 million to $1.5 million today.
Well, that's great. I mean, to me, the air quality has a pattern of putting regulations in place that we can't meet the technology or whatever you want to call it.
And, correct.
And I don't see that changing anytime soon. So hopefully things will progress so that we can meet these mandates.
Absolutely. And to note, I believe in the presentation we identified, there's roughly 250 to 300 light duty vehicles. We suspect that those will be first generation from the manufacturers, F-150s and the like. The heavy component and medium component, that will be slower. And I suspect there will be opportunities for us to defer purchases of that type of vehicle simply because it's not available.
Okay. Has there been any calculations done on what we think the savings will be by converting some vehicles from natural gas or gasoline or whatever we're using now onto this?
We haven't yet because the cost of those vehicles isn't widely known.
I'll be interested to see that when it's available.
Yes. Part of that master plan that we mentioned will incorporate estimates of those, but those heavy-duty vehicles are, to your point, largely unavailable.
Okay. Thank you.
Director Slauson, do you have questions?
Yes. I think two questions. One is, you were talking about the accessibility for the public in our parking lot right there. I don't have an electrical vehicle, so I don't know. Could they leave their car there for 6 hours and go over to the Field of Dreams, or does that cost them a whole lot more money?
So under the program, we are required to provide the public access during normal business hours. I suspect there will be incidents where a vehicle from the public across the street may be in the lot beyond that period of time, and we're going to have to address those. The key component is that the public access aspect of this includes employee charging. So to qualify for the grant, in terms of the incentive, the utility looks at employees as the public. So we, by providing this access to our employees to charge, it also qualifies for the funding.
So what if it's 5 o'clock and we're closing up and there are three cars?
Yeah. And that may happen. That may happen. And we've had discussions. We've talked with safety and risk management. That certainly could happen. We'll certainly have signage and so forth out there to advise of that. But, yes, that is a drawback to this particular incentive in trade-off for getting the incentive and the infrastructure in place.
And Dr. Slauson, yeah, you're absolutely right. In addition to the signage that Dan mentioned, we work closely with our security personnel because we do have 24/7 security personnel at our facilities. So if if we lock the gates, then potentially one way to address that would be someone coming to retrieve their vehicle after hours would they would be able to quickly call our security personnel, and we would address it in that fashion. But those are the details that we're still going to have to work out.
Okay, and then one other question, sort of piggybacking on to what Director Record referred to, that is in terms of CARB jumping the gun. In the event that 5 years from now we're transitioning and the infrastructure or the capacity is not there and everyone's moving to electrical, are we going to have a period where we have an overlap of our current fleet so that in the event we couldn't charge because everyone was converting? And the state said, okay, we're going to rescind these dates and you can still use these other cars for a while. Are we going to be able to have a fleet that's functional if the electrical grid is not available for charging all of our electrical vehicles?
Well, good question, and there's a lot of discussion out there regarding that very issue. We're implementing these regulations on the state when there are power instances of power shortage. Certainly something that will need to be addressed. And as we transition primarily in those heavier duty vehicles where there's potentially an emergency or an after-hour response need for the district, that will be some of the discussions we'll be having with the regulators in terms of whether or not we need to procure the vehicles in zero emissions or CNG.
Okay. All right.
And to your point, Director Slauson, as well as the point that Director Record made, often you are correct. What we've seen, regulations are ambitious, and the reality is often compliance doesn't occur within the set time frame. And what we've seen in the past is that the regulators will reassess and provide extensions or recalibrate based on, as Dan mentioned, that some of these vehicles are not even available in the marketplace. So I do agree with the sentiment that often regulations are overly ambitious, but we have seen the regulating agencies come back and provide either extensions or calibrations and essentially trying to address the reality on the ground.
Okay, and I do support this item. I think we need to move in this direction, and with Southern California Edison's participation, I think it's worthwhile.
Thank you. I think we're getting ahead of the curve by doing this. That's...
Director Armstrong.
Yeah, just a question. Maybe you covered it and I miss it, but how quickly do these stations charge a vehicle?
Yeah, that's a great question, actually. So this particular implementation is, I believe, level 2 chargers. And so that is the longer duration charging time frame, but we are configuring this so that we can easily expand the infrastructure, particularly behind the fence,
okay,
to install the faster charge equipment as well. And there is some technology changing with regard to charging ports that will enable that quicker charging as well.
Just for frame of reference, at 6.4 kilowatts, you'll get about 24 to 26 miles of range an hour of charging.
I'd like to just echo Director Record's sentiments. I do believe CARB gets a little ahead of technology, and the fact that we have some very specialized vehicles that I think even in 2035 will probably still be running on some sort of fossil fuel because they're specialized heavy-duty vehicles. But, again, we are complying with what the state is asking us to do. Before we vote, I wanted to see if our legal counsel would like to do any public comment on this item.
I'm a beneficiary of...
that is why I asked you if you'd like to...
I think I'm not an unbiased observer. But...
very, very good. So, I am excited that we are going to put this out in a parking lot.
So. Just one other comment, and it's kind of aspirational, I guess, but this district has a proven record of accessing grant funding, and maybe there's a program where we could incorporate some solar with some batteries related to charging. And so anyway, I'm sure that you guys are always looking for opportunities. So I appreciate the partnership with Edison, and hopefully we can continue that and make this a very positive thing. I'll move this item.
In honor of our legal counsel, I will second the item. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes 4-0 with Director Corona absent. I do look forward, and I'm sure Steve does too, to seeing those out there in the parking lot in the near future. With that, why don't we do item 5, which is our informational item. We will do number A, and after that, we will take a break. So, good morning, Nicole.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. I appreciate the opportunity to present to you the fourth quarter results for our fiscal year 22 enterprise performance measures. So as you may recall, we have 12 key indicators of the district's performance in the areas of efficiency, reliability, customer service, safety, and financial performance. And overall, we've had a great quarter in this fourth quarter. Our first measure is our water operating cost per acre feet delivered. We had strong results. We're able to control costs well during the fourth quarter. We do see a variation in June where we had higher costs than our goal. And this is due to a larger percentage of untreated water purchases and the resulting treatment costs to treat that additional water. Let me go back one slide. So, if we drill into the details, this chart shows our water operating costs and how it's trended for the year. And you can see in June where we had costs go up to about $14 million. And again, in this chart, if we drill down to the details, we can see the darker blue area is our purchased water cost. And we can see that that blue area is a lot higher than previous months. And the higher treatment costs are reflected in the green area, the $2,022,000. And that's the higher chemical costs and treatment for the untreated water. The next measure is the wastewater treatment operating cost per million gallons treated. And as you can see, we had costs well controlled in the fourth quarter. Costs were below goal each of the 3 months. And the next efficiency measure is a new recycled water metric. At the last update, we discussed staff revisiting the recycled water metric to find a better way to gauge the health of the recycled water system. And we believe what we're presenting today achieves that. So the new metric is the recycled water storage, and it will also look at usage each month. And it will help us to manage our recycled water supplies during times of high and low demand. Our goal, as you can see by the fuel gauge on the right-hand side of the slide, will be between 75 and 100% of our storage forecast levels. So this chart on the left-hand side shows what our actual storage levels are on average each month. And the blue line represents that 75% bottom range of the goal. As you can see in June, we were just a hair below the goal at 74%. And we have some additional charts to provide you a little more detail on this goal. This chart shows our storage actual to forecast. The darker blue area represents our actual storage levels for each month, and the lighter blue area in the background shows our forecast levels. So we can see how our actuals are trending against forecast. We also thought it would be important to show you the green line, toward the top of the chart, which is our storage capacity max. It represents about 85% of our total storage in acre feet. And this is at about the level where we would consider the need to discharge. You also may see this black dotted line and the lighter gray dotted line. These two dotted lines represent our historical maximum and minimum storage levels. And we thought that was also important to look at when we're, proactively working to understand our levels and where we should be during each part of the year. And the next chart shows our actual usage versus our two-year average. So each green bar represents the recycled water usage for each month for fiscal year 22. And the blue line represents our average for the past 2 years. The next metric is our self-generated power. And as you can see, we're doing very well and trending above our monthly production goals each month. And this is largely due to our new solar facilities. We've had new capacity added. Toward the beginning of the year, you may recall that we had some mechanical issues with the fuel cells, and so we were a little lower in some months in our actual generation. But once the fuel cells both went offline in the third quarter of this year, you can see our production increased. And additionally, we added the phase two solar facilities, and the Resbict actually was added in May. So you can see where that blue area for the solar facilities has increased. The next measure is our customer hours out of service. So this measure shows our goal actually for this measure is 8 hours, less than 8 hours, per 1,000 accounts each month. And all 3 months during the fourth quarter fell below that target. We do note that May approached that goal, or I'm sorry, that target. And that was due to an unplanned outage. We had a mainline repair that lasted approximately 11 hours and affected 40 customers. This occurred in Sun City, in your area, Director Armstrong. We also had a planned outage in June, and this one occurred in Moreno Valley, Director Slauson. And this was due to a contractor mainline tie-in. It lasted about 11 hours, and that one affected 21 customers. The next measure is our wastewater treatment reliability. And as you can see, consistently meeting this goal with our facilities performing as planned. Our uptime goal is at least 98% each month, and we landed near 100 during the fourth quarter. The next measure is the wastewater spills for collection and facility systems. We had two spills during the quarter. And one of those occurred in Paris. It was due to a mechanical plug left in the line during new construction, unfortunately. And so that caused an overflow at the manhole. 1,070 gallons were spilled. However, we recovered most of that. 1,050 gallons were recovered along with a washdown. In May, we also had a sanitary sewer overflow that occurred in Hemet. And this was due to a blockage in the line from debris and trash. Approximately 100 gallons were spilled at the manhole. The next measure is our customer satisfaction score. This score encompasses both our mail-in surveys and after-call surveys. And as you can see, we've had great customer satisfaction. Our goal is 4, and we've achieved that goal, exceeded that goal, actually, for most of this year. Next, we have the safety injury and illness rate. The goal for this measure is less than 3, and we use a rolling 12-month average. We ended June at 1.6, a little bit higher this quarter due to 2 injuries that occurred. And next, we move to our financial measures. We have the general and administrative costs as a percentage of our total operating cost. Our goal for each month is to have G&A remain at 11.4% or less than total costs. And we ended June at 11.4%, so just below. And this chart digs into the details to show what those total costs are versus the G&A. Our next financial measure is the net operating cost, net operating margin, which is our revenue minus our cost. And the trend for the fourth quarter was overall favorable, although you do see for June, we were just slightly below goal, and that was due to the higher water operating costs that we discussed earlier. We see the impact of the larger percentage of untreated water and the associated treatment costs reflected in this net operating margin. And lastly, we have the capital improvement project actual to budget. Nick did mention during his update earlier this morning that we ended the year at 94%, which we're very pleased about. So this chart shows the $99.9 million of the $106 million spent. So in summary, all 12 of the measures presented are performing better than the monthly goal. The next quarterly report is scheduled for December of this year. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions you may have.
Any questions on the metrics and measurements, Director Record?
Good report. Nicole, could you put up slide 11, please? I think it's really interesting to see the trend, and especially this year, recycled water usage. I mean, it's been a dry year, but the other part of it is there's forage crops are, the price has just gone up dramatically, so there's a lot more demand for guys to grow stuff. So it's unfortunate that now we're reaching a time where we may have impacts to our ability to supply recycled water with state legislation, but I'm sure we'll figure out how to work through that. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Director Record.
Any other questions?
Nope, just great presentation, good information. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. I always like to say we're doing well, but these are the charts and graphs and numbers that prove we are. So with that, why don't we take about a 6 or 7 minute break before our next presentation?
He's got the letter next.
If we could reconvene. We are going to go off on item 5B, which is source control, sewer discharge prohibitions. This is something the board asked for a while back after we had discussion on this. So welcome, please. The floor is yours. I'm looking very forward to this presentation.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to giving it. Okay, here we go. All right. Well, good morning, President Polly, members of the board. I'm happy to be here today. To tell you a little about EMWD source control and how we manage our discharges to the sewer. First of all, I would like to talk about our mission. The mission of the Source Control Department is to prevent the district from violating environmental regulations, prevent the reclamation plants from receiving harmful discharges, protect our staff, protect the collection system, and ensure that the water discharge to the sanitary sewer can meet our recycled water requirements and reuse goals. The Source Control Department has 10 staff members. Source Control conducted more than 2,100 inspections last year at numerous commercial and industrial locations, as well as 293 plant checks. Source Control also conducts investigations of illegal discharges and infiltration and inflow discharges. Here's a basic diagram showing the flow of wastewater from businesses to the collection system, to the reclamation facility, and onto the recycled water system for use by customers. The red stars indicate the point where the wastewater from industrial and commercial industries ties into the EMWD sewer system. In order to reuse industrial and commercial wastewater or the resulting biosolids, pollutants must be eliminated or removed prior to reaching the collection system. The District Source Control Department manages this concern through prohibiting harmful discharges, permitting, sampling, inspections, and finally, education. Here are some photos of Source Control staff in action. On the left is a photo of an inspector sampling one of our liquid waste haulers. To the right is an inspector conducting permit-required sampling. Here's more photos. To the left, a flow monitor is being installed to measure the flow and available pipeline capacity. To the right, a staff member is conducting a grease interceptor installation inspection. The primary guidance document for the Source Control Program is Ordinance 59.7. The Clean Water Act requires a district to have a Source Control Program and an ordinance. Clean Water Act requirements are incorporated into the Code of Federal Regulations and into EMWD Ordinance 59.7. New commercial and industrial users must fill out an application and go through a plan check process prior to discharging to EMWD in order to show that they can meet the ordinance requirements. Another guidance document that EMWD uses is our local limits. Local limits address the specific needs and concerns of a reclamation plant, its sludge, and its receiving waters. As a result, a reclamation plant must evaluate its facility's capabilities and establish local limits in order to protect it from receiving wastes that will pass through or interfere with wastewater treatment operations. Above are some types of industries that we have and pollutants in their wastewater. So, for instance, metal finishing would have metals that would come to us, TTO and cyanide. Fertilizer manufacturers would discharge BOD, high levels of BOD, TSS, ammonia nitrate, and phosphorus. And semiconductor manufacturing would give us high levels of TDS and total toxic organics. Above are some of the prohibited discharges in our ordinance. Most of the prohibitions are federally mandated prohibitions, but some are specific to the district, such as water softeners for TDS concerns or hydrosolate for advanced water recycling concerns. Hydrolysis is the process by which a body is chemically reduced to its essential organic components and bone fragments. Hydrolysis became a topic of interest recently. So where does EMWD's authority to prohibit any waste stream come from? The authority to prohibit any waste stream to the POTW is granted to the district by the California Government Code. The California Government Code grants the district the authority to regulate and or prohibit by the adoption of an ordinance and by issuance of permits, authorizations, and special agreements the discharge of any waste directly or indirectly to the POTW.
A little more on hydroxylate. A request was made by EMWD to SCAP and SARDA to reach out to wastewater agencies concerning hydroxylate. 14 agencies responded. Of those 14 agencies, 9 agencies have prohibitions. Of those 14 agencies that responded, 9 agencies currently had no prohibition on policy. 3 agencies have prohibitions on hydroxylate. 1 had a complete prohibition of all hydroxylate, animal and human. That was San Bernardino. They currently have a groundwater recharge system. 1 had a prohibition on human and a conditional prohibition on animal, and that was Orange County. They allowed the animal discharge to their ocean outfall treatment plant. And 1 prohibits only human, and that's Western. And currently, all their recycled water is going to the Veterans Cemetery. Hydroxylate legislation. The original drafts for this bill allowing human hydroxylate discharges to the sewer were opposed by Orange County Water District, Water Reuse California, and the California Catholic Conference. Orange County Water District and Water Reuse California contended that the original bill did not provide sufficient protections for potable reuse facilities. In the final bill analysis, acceptance of human hydroxylate waste by OTW became voluntary, giving each agency the ability to prohibit or allow hydroxylate to the sewer based on their community's needs. This bill allowed a prohibition for any reason, including for public perception and for promotion of advanced water recycling systems. Some issues related to hydroxylate are high TDS, which we have an issue here with in our district, VOD, and pH. Those could cause wastewater compliance issues. Hydroxylate uses metal salts in the process to break down the bodies, and those metal salts contribute to high TDS. Another issue would be silt formation in the sewer system that could cause blockages and sanitary sewer overflows. And finally, there's the issue with public acceptance and for advanced water recycling systems. So what are some discharge alternatives for prohibited wastes? The first 3 on the slide are options for hydroxylate. 1 would be non-hazardous waste collection facilities, such as the Inland Empire Brine Line, except high TDS non-reclaimable wastewater. The other would be hazardous waste collection facilities, which there are many of. And a third option would be on-site or off-site evaporation. All these alternatives are currently in use throughout the district this time. So moving on to the last thing that we like to do, well, we like to educate our users. And so when we're out there with our commercial industrial users, we're always trying to let them know what we're trying to do and why we're trying to do it. We give out educational posters and pamphlets to the users. Most recently, we had an issue with pool construction. It caused a sewer blockage, and we created a district newsletter and sent that out to try to resolve that issue. Another example is a Healthy Sewer Initiative and Fog newsletter that we send out periodically. And that concludes the presentation today. Thank you for your time and attention. I am happy to answer any questions you have. We are happy to answer any questions you might have concerning.
No, thank you. Great presentation. Any questions from the board?
No. Thank you.
Thank you.
I just want to have, just to clarify, and our legal counsel can weigh in, just that this board has the absolute authority to regulate what we can and cannot enter into our system, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And so, again, I given, and this has to do with some public perceptions, given where we're going with some of our wastewater and what we're going to do, I think we're probably going to stay on the course of what we have now. But I do appreciate to groups that some of the veterinarians that came in here, we give them alternatives of how to deal with the issue. And so that is the one thing I love about this district. We don't tend to say no. We said here may be another opportunity, a better way to do it. So I do appreciate the presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Great job on that.
Thank you.
We will now move to item 6 on our agenda, which is to receive and file various reports. Can I get a motion and a second? Director Armstrong, a motion. Director Slauson, a second on that. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Beckard?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that is 4-0 with Director Corona absent. That brings us to our calendar review and director's reports. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. I have two events for your consideration. One of them is actually not listed on the front of your packet, but it is the rescheduled Temecula Valley Legislative Summit, and it is tomorrow at 7 a.m. I apologize for the delay announcement, but it was just informed to me last night. So, additionally, we have the Hemet State of the City Address is scheduled for November 4th. And then turning to page 2 and 3 is the board members' master calendar for the next 2 weeks. Please review this information and let me know if there are any updates. And continuing on page 3 are the future conferences and events that are taking place. We have on Thursday, October 13th, is the City of San Jacinto State of the City Address. Followed by Saturday, October 15th, is EMWD's hosting the open house here at the district. And then on Wednesday, October 19th, is the rescheduled State of the District for the Riverside County Supervisor Chuck Washington. And Thursday, October 20th, is the State of the City Address for the City of Menifee. And Tuesday, November 29th, kicks off the Aqua Fall Conference in Indian Wells. So those event flyers are attached to the back of your calendar packet for review. And continuing on page 3 are the board and board committee meetings over the next 3 months. Please pay special attention to next Wednesday is the special board legislative strategy workshop here at the district. That'll begin at 1 o'clock.
And Jennifer, is that in the boardroom?
It is. It is here in the boardroom. Correct. Okay. So, and then also the following Wednesday on our normally scheduled board meeting, we'll have a new start time of 10 a.m. to accommodate for the State of the District by the Riverside County Chuck Washington. So, and then tomorrow for the Administrative Committee, there is a new start time of 1 p.m. for that committee meeting. And then the rest of the meetings currently right now are all on schedule through December. Sorry, one more notation. The Retirement Trust Committee did move to December 5th, Monday, December 5th. Otherwise, all other committee meetings are on schedule. So, and then at the bottom of page 4 is the interagency meetings, which are currently all on schedule through December. And then we have the list of observed holidays, and EMWD's offices will be closed November 11th, 24th, 25th, and December 26th. So are there any questions regarding the calendar review?
No. Thank you very much.
Please, my report.
Always
thank
great
you.
Job keeping this organized. I know I totally appreciate it. With that, we will go to directors' reports. We will start with Director Armstrong.
Yes, I had my monthly update with the general manager, and it's a great update. And, you know, just it always highlights just how many initiatives this agency has going on all at the same time. And so I just want to compliment again our team for what a great job they do. And it's a lot to take on and coordinate and make happen, but just do a great job. So I appreciate those updates.
Very good. Director Corona is absent. I had two events. We attended the Boy Scouts America Talkwitz District Distinguished Citizens Gala. Good events for scouts. We actually filled our table with some scouting families here from EMWD, and it was a good evening. I always want to support groups like that. I'm encouraging to take advantage of some of our bird walks coming up and maybe some other things in the future here at EMWD concerning scouting. Western Riverside Council Governments had our meeting. Director Denstead and I were able to give a quick drought update, and more and more of the public agencies and cities, I think, are really getting into the drought messaging. I talked to a couple of our local cities that are starting to include that in their public messaging. So the word is getting out there on that. Director Record.
So Joint Inland and Orange County Caucus, September 8th, the review of met agendas. We've moved the time so that we could have participation from General Manager Hoshkalil. It's always a good opportunity to review the agenda with other agencies. Palo Verde Irrigation District candidate interviews. Metropolitan is the biggest landowner in the Palo Verde Irrigation District, and the board is selected based on acreage owned. And so there's a group of three directors that Chair Gray appoints to come up with how Metropolitan's going to use their votes. Our policy has been the last couple of elections is that we do Zoom interviews with all the candidates and then make a recommendation, and that's what happens going forward. It's a good process. I would like to report that there's a woman from Blythe who's a multi-generational farming family who has been elected to the Palo Verde Board. I think that's very positive, and look forward to working with her and the rest of the board. Standing committee and board meeting September 12th and 13th. I participated remotely, but there are more directors coming back in person, which is a good thing. We had a discussion about Bay Delta initiatives and our policy principles, which is appropriate to update at this point. We're not able to approve what staff recommended, but they're coming back this month with another effort. I think one of the biggest issues is the 09 legislation talked about reduced reliance on the Delta. And in my opinion, Metropolitan has done that because as our population increases, we don't increase our imports from the Bay Delta. So in my mind, that's a reduced reliance, but not everyone sees it that way, obviously. A D.C. Finance Authority meeting, you know, several agencies involved in this authority, and our job is to figure out how to finance conveyance if it ever happens, and so we're trying to stay abreast of what's going on. Validation is very important, and we're fortunate that Stephen is our legal counsel, so good advice there, but we want to be ready if the time comes to actually finance a project that's more and more needed, as everyone knows. Had a conference call with Liz Croson, who's Met's new sustainability person, along with Jolene Walsh on non-functional turf efforts. Good meeting. And the standing committee meeting is September 27th. Good discussion about non-functional turf. A lot of work to do, and as you can imagine, encouraging Metropolitan to be more aggressive in that effort. The other thing of note is that nominations were open for board chair election, which is next month. The only person that was nominated was Adon Ortega. There wasn't an item on the executive committee agenda, which would put on the board agenda the ability for the board to waive the admin code and allow Chair Gray to seek another term. And while that was passed by the executive committee, the vote was, I think, kind of telling on where the board is headed. So it should be a very interesting election next week, and I will keep you posted. EMWD monthly update with General Manager, good discussion. A temporary meter construction grading operation in drought conditions, and that was a request because there is still a lot of grading going on, and people are reaching out to me saying, hey, you want me to reduce my use, and I see water everywhere, And so we just wanted to make sure that we're taking advantage of our recycled water at every opportunity. And it was a very good presentation by staff, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate the effort. I think it's really important for us as directors to be able to say that, well, I get it, but here's what we're doing, and it isn't just something that we don't think about and we don't take lightly. Yesterday was the NWD Rancho California Water District Ad Hoc Committee. Good discussion. I feel like we have a good relationship with that agency and hope that continues.
All right. Thank you very much. Director Slauson.
Yes, I attended the update with the general manager. As always, that was informative and appreciated. I attended the Chamber of Commerce Wake Up. It was sponsored by the City of Moreno Valley, and Mayor Pro Tem Ed Delgado made a presentation. Attended SAPA yesterday, and of note, per the OWL Steering Committee's recommendation, the Commission approved the OWL portfolio of 10 projects in order to receive Prop 1 IRWM Round 2 grant funding, and confirmed that three North Orange County projects meet the state requirements and thus to be included in the Round 2 list. We approved an agreement with DUDEC for assistance with the Prop 1 grant, Round 2 grant application, and we had a presentation regarding the weather modification pilot operations program, and we deferred that item for approximately a year, I think. So that's it.
All right, very good. Do we have any director's comments or future agenda items? Seeing none. I'll ask our legal counsel if we need to have a closed session.
Yes, Mr. Chair, we do have a closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9B as identified on item 9.
Very good. And we're going to do closed session here. Very good. We will take a moment to close over to closed session. Very good. We are back in open session. I'm going to ask the general counsel to give us a report out of our closed session.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The board met pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9 to discuss significant exposure to litigation concerning outstanding claims. No formal action was taken by the board. That concludes my closed session report.
Thank you very much. That we will adjourn into our next regular scheduled meeting, which is Wednesday, October 19th. 2022, at a special time for that meeting beginning at 10 a.m. We are adjourned.
Thank you.